Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. Once again, we're here to share the latest on health and healing. This study comes from Frontiers Nutrition, a major peer-reviewed journal, and it's from Sin Lao Hospital in Taiwan, and it talks about vitamin D3, and when you're deficient, it's linked with premature death. This was a large study. In fact, they're looking at the association between vitamin D3 and a greater risk of just dying. The investigation included 11,000 participants in the National Health Nutrition Examination Survey. They were between 50 and 79, and they tested their serum 5-hydroxyvitamin D levels of 12 nanograms per milliliter or less were classified as severely deficient, and most were severely deficient. And during a medium follow-up period of 97 months, there was 1,585 deaths. Deficient vitamin D levels was associated with a 67% greater risk of dying during follow-up from all causes. Meaning anything that's going to cause death, you were 67% more likely to die if you were deficient in vitamin D3. So that's pretty large. Should make us pay attention. Get your vitamin D each day. The sunlight is great, but through your food is also good. Lots of fruits and vegetables, color oil, or fish oil. From Temple University, an article published in the peer-reviewed journal Hypertension Research talks about the juice concentrate from a Japanese fruit benefits cardiovascular health. Researchers at the Lewis Katz School of Medicine at Temple University show that cardiovascular disease risk can be reduced with a simple juice concentrate from the Japanese plum. The name, scientific name, is Prunus, P-R-U-N-U-S, Mumi, M-U-M-E. Now that's a fruit that's widely consumed in Asian countries. It's much like an apple here, and that is promoted as a health food in Japan. So the raw fruit of the Japanese plum, traditionally referred to as umbe, U-M-E, in Japan, and I'm sure you've seen it in health food stores, umbe plum. Well, it's used to detoxify the body. And indeed, in Japan, they use it as a detoxifying juice, commonly used. So there's a lot of health in that plum. It's been used from at least the 18th century. It's been shown to include the ability to prevent heart disease. The evidence from previous studies so far supports these claims. And in experiments in smooth muscle cells of blood vessels, the plum was able to attenuate growth-promoting signals induced by what is called angiotensin II, a circulatory hormone that plays a central role in the development of hypertension. So it can help prevent hypertension. So, something simple, the Japanese plum. Now, from the University of Southern California comes a study of a fasting-like diet has profound effects on autoimmune and inflammatory conditions like multiple sclerosis. According to a human study, a fasting diet switches on a process in which the body kills bad cells and begins to generate new healthy ones. Researchers believe that evidence is mounting that a diet which mimics cyclical fasting, something we talk about all the time, like if you eat dinner at 6 or 7 o'clock, don't eat again till breakfast, anything. And on Saturdays and Sundays, try juicing throughout both days. You can have a smoothie, but no solid food. And then about every 3 months, go 3 or 4 days on juices and smoothies, no solid food. In this study, it reduced the symptoms of multiple sclerosis and beyond. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Reports. Interrupting the degenerative process is key to recovery. So scientists discovered that the diet triggers a death and life process for cells that appear critical for the body's repair. So they found that in this study, a fasting mimicking diet refers to a 3-day cycle of very little protein and few calories. the exact foods used are not made publicly known, so, but I would suggest that you focus on juicing with lots of greens, kale, vegetable soups are fine, and reduce the fat intake. It also reduces C-reactive protein and visceral fat in the body, and that helps protect you against cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and rheumatoid arthritis. So, very, very positive. Mind you, modified fasting reduces pro-inflammatory cytokines and increases corticosterone levels. And modified fasting suppresses autoimmunity by inducing lymphocyte programmed cell death. And it promotes regeneration in multiple sclerosis models. And it's safe and feasible and is a good treatment. Now, from Tel Aviv University comes a study about new computerized training approach found to significantly reduce ADHD symptoms in 1 in 3 participants. Computerized progressive attention training, what is called CPAT, C-P-A-T, is a new treatment developed at the Tel Aviv University, and it significantly improved the symptoms of 33% of students suffering from ADHD. And this is in comparison to an improvement in symptoms in only 11% of students who participated in a parallel protocol of mindfulness training, during which the participants practice a meditation designed to reduce their attention difficulties. Furthermore, unlike drug treatments like Ritalin that I'm absolutely opposed to, these improvements were maintained even 4 months after the end of the treatment. So you stop the protocol and you get the benefits for another 4 months. That's terrific. So this is something brand new. We're sharing it to you. It's the first time you're going to hear this. So it's called CPAT, C-P-A-T system, and is producing great results where other studies have not on ADHD. And from Seoul Medical Center in Korea, the effects of Korean red ginseng on cognitive function and quantitative EEG in Alzheimer's patients was studied. And it showed that Korean red ginseng has a nootropic effect. This study assessed the efficacy of Korean red ginseng on cognitive function and quantitative electroencephalography, EEG, in patients with Alzheimer's disease, and it improved it substantially. So, one more way to help people with Alzheimer's. And from UCLA Brain Research Institute, an article published in Microbiome, a traumatic experience can literally reshape your microbiome. So they analyzed the microbiomes of a group of students with irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, in a fairly common chronic condition marked by pain in the stomach and gas and indigestion. They did the same for a control group of healthy volunteers and also collected brain scans and stool samples and behavioral biographical information for participants in both categories. The results were startling. Across all of these individuals who were in the irritable bowel syndrome group were far more likely to exhibit anxiety and depression. When the researchers further studied IBS-afflicted subjects in two smaller groups, those with a microbiome undistinguishable from that of a healthy control, and those with noticeable difference, they found that the subgroup with different microbiomes also had more history of early life trauma. So I suggest two things. One is, if you suffer from irritable bowel syndrome or from any of the itises, ileitis, colitis, then take yourself a good supplement, somewhere between 2 to 10 billion probiotics per day. Secondly, I suggest that you consume 1 8-ounce glass of no-sodium cabbage juice per day. Ideally, make the cabbage fresh. You got to use a lot of cabbage because it doesn't hold a lot of water. I would suggest 2 heads of cabbage. Red cabbage and white cabbage are both good. Red's better. And then I also suggest that you undergo regressive hypnosis therapy to help you realize that whatever trauma you suffered earlier in life shouldn't be impacting you today. And with regressive hypnosis, you can go back, find the time, find the trauma, and the hypnotherapist can then reprogram that situation, taking a bad situation and making it into a good situation. I mentioned this one before, and you've probably heard me say this, but we have a lot of new listeners. I had a friend who was a chiropractor. In fact, he was considered the chiropractor with the magic hands because he had great results with people. And when we put him in a study at the Institute of Applied Biology on seeing whether or not his energy coming through his hands could impact a mouse with a special tumor, he was able to do it 6 out of 6 times. He was one of the 5 people who were able to do it. In any case, one day when I was going down so we could have lunch, there was a gentleman coming out of his office and said, "Well, okay, Marty, I will see you in a month, but I feel good now." And I was just curious. Strange question. Unless all he wanted to do is have a back subluxation program once a month. And I said, "Why do you come once a month?" And he said, "Well, because every month, without fail, I end up with this excruciating back pain in my upper back, around my neck. And no matter what I do, medicines, nothing works. But Morty's adjustments do make a difference for a couple days." I said, "If it happens every month in the same way and doesn't happen every day, that's like saying, well, I have cancer, but only once a month. I have high blood pressure, but only once a month." I said, "Would you be willing to try an experiment?" He said, "Sure." I said, "Because this may be able to help you overcome this completely." And Morty was up for it. So I introduced him to Dr. Donald Mullins, who worked at the Albert Ellis Center, the foremost psychoanalytic center in New York. And he was put under hypnosis. And then, if you watch, it's kind of interesting. Donald did it this way. He had a book, like a coloring book, and he said, "Now let's go through each page each year. And in this year, you look at all the pictures on the page and you tell me which cause you harm or fear or anger or shame." And when he was 4 years old, you could see his body actually, his neck coming up, and it was physically, his body just went into like a spasm. And when he was 4 years old, this trauma came up, and the trauma was this. He was helping his father clear the dinner table of dishes, and he hit the rug with his foot and tripped, and a dish broke. And his father yelled at him, "You're not responsible. I can't trust you to do anything." And he remembers being in a corner and kind of holding his shoulders up. He locked in the trauma into the musculature, which has a memory forever. And so what Donald did was he put him under the hypnosis, and then he said, "We're going to do a Greek ceremony of joy and happiness. We're going to take the dishes off the table, going to go over to the fireplace, going to throw them in and break them all. And then we're going to laugh and sing and hug each other." And in this process, you could see his whole body changing, relaxing. And then he hugs his son in this hypnosis and says, "Son, you will never do anything in your life that will make you love you any less." Interesting that he brought one session. That was it, one-hour session. He brought him out of the hypnosis. Now, mind you, when you're under hypnosis, you hear everything going on. You think, I'm not hypnotized. This isn't going to impact me. And suddenly your hand goes up in the air because that was part of what you were supposed to do. And suddenly you're standing saying, "I wasn't hypnotized," but your hand's straight up in the air like you're asking a question. And he never had a back pain again. Why was he having it once a month? Because he was a manager of a bank in the neighborhood. And once a month, he had to be accountable to the district manager and to make sure his bank was being managed correctly. And hence, the district manager represented his father, and the stress of that was an inaccurate adjustment to when he had his trauma. So a lot of people are walking around with a lot of trauma and not recognizing they're overreacting to situations today that have nothing to do with today, nothing to do with this moment. And I'm sure many people listening right now think, yeah, I know people, they act out for no good reason. I don't know why. That's one of the ways you can help someone. That's all we have to share today on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And remember, go to Gary and All Google. There are thousands of videos and audios and a series that I'm doing called Classrooms on the Air. And I deal with a broad range of topics. Some are short, 10, 15 minutes. Some are longer, an hour. It's free. You can also go to Rumble, and you can also go to GaryNoll.com. Those are all good sources. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. We're going to go to a few clips now, and I'd like your feedback because I'm selecting topics along with Dylan and Kyle in our studio in New York that represent talking points, things you could agree or disagree in part or whole. But I think it's important we have these discussions, civil, open discussions, so that people realize that there's a lot more answers than we have been allowed to believe. In fact, one clip I'm hopeful we'll play a little later is from an MD, PhD professor, one of the most respected scientists and physicians in Germany, who criticized some of the COVID policies as making no sense and actually being dangerous. And for that, he was arrested and put into a mental institution. This is the comments that he's made since being released. Everything that he said then was proven to be correct. Everything the authorities believed and exercised their power to stop people was incorrect. So here's the larger question, the overarching question. When so many people who we've respected in the past have been shown to be this wrong and not correct themselves, that's one, not apologize, that's two, and keep doubling down as if they have not been exposed, number three, then what does it say about the power structure in our country at this time? Remember, up until about 2 years ago, if you mentioned that there were hidden hand, in fact, we wrote an article called The Hidden Hand and did a three-hour CD on this called The Hidden Hand, the real power behind the scenes. And we show that the people who are giving the orders, the technocrats, generally highly educated, coming from respected institutions and belonging to all the so-called right groups like the Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg, and the Atlantic Council Business Roundtable, different types of associations, well, you'd have been called a conspiracy nut. Today, none of this is hidden. We have right out there the World Economic Forum, unelected, a group of people who are just successful, but they're successful in their given field, like in acting, it's Leonardo DiCaprio. Yet he gets from the River Foundation, Robert Kennedy's group that did a lot of good work on cleaning up the Hudson River. He gets an award as Environmentalist of the Year, and he flies from the Cannes Film Festival to there in a private jet, picks up the award, and flies back, as if somehow that's not a contradiction, but it is. And we see all these virtue chambers. Well, what does he know about world events? He produced a documentary called The 12th Hour. I couldn't watch it. It was so badly done, in my opinion, all black backgrounds. There was no life in it. And yet, you know, suddenly that's heralded. And, okay, do a good documentary, but be a good environmentalist. And none of the people out there now are good environmentalists. They talk it because it's politically right, meaning if you're on the right side of global warming, then anything you say is accepted without challenge, like electric cars. Well, they're terrible. They're an environmental disaster. So is solar. But if you ask, is the point of this exercise to switch from toxic and fossil fuels to non or less toxic? And the answer is yes. Then why are you doing it this way? You're doing it all wrong. You're giving these huge corporations all the money in the so-called private-public relationship. Remember Barack Obama and that big solar company lost hundreds of millions of dollars? Nothing was done. No one is held accountable. Never trust these private-public relationships. Remember, I did an expose about, and it was in Iraq. Soldiers could not wash their own clothes for a quarter. Instead, Halliburton was given the contract to wash all the GIs' clothes, and they were paid $100 for a load of wash. How do you justify that? You don't have to. Every one of our government agencies is so utterly inept, corrupt, inefficient that if we cut half the entire budget, it still wouldn't be enough. And that's how much money we waste. But no one seems to care about all the fraudulent Science Foundation research that is meaningless, giving quails cocaine to see how they mate. Who comes up with these stupid ideas? And yet the game is fixed. As long as you contribute money to campaigns, as long as you're in that inner circle, you'll always be rewarded, and you're never dealt a criticism. And that's where we live in. Same with reporters. So here's my question. Why are you still believing, or anyone believing, in anything anyone in authority says? Because they're wrong virtually all the time, and they lie. Repeatedly, not just once in a while, but all the time about everything, including things they don't have to lie about. Why do we accept it? Why are we indifferent to it? Why we do not stand up against it? That's my question. 888-874-4888 is the talkback number. I work a lot of hours and did a lot of lecturing and touring to help the women's health initiatives during the 1970s and 80s and 90s. And in fact, one of the second generation's most respected spokespersons was a close friend. We wrote a book together, went on tour, Barbara Seaman. And we'd known each other for a long time. I had her on my radio show. And she said, we need a really good science-based report on the human body involving everything that impacts women. And so that's what we wrote, 1,600 pages. In fact, my publisher, my main big publisher, didn't want to publish it. No one's going to buy a $75 book that's 1,600 pages. Well, we got on PBS and we sold 75,000 copies. And so in most circumstances, they would be right. I would listen to them that when they were wrong. But the point was that you didn't have one spokesperson. You had probably 50. And to this day, I will say the same thing. I felt that at least 200 women whose names I continued to share with the people at conferences that should be a part of the women's collective, these were spiritual feminists, people like Jean Houston and a whole group of others, including many Native American women. But they weren't. They weren't invited. It was very political. And then along comes Camille Paglia. And she set a lot of the women's movement on its head because she said, stop hating men. You know, the world is not better or less because you've created this war. It's confused everyone. Men are not the problem. People in power are the problem because they control both men and women. They control all the men who've, by the millions, hundreds of millions, have given their lives in world wars for nothing. You know, they control wages, they control everything. So look at who the real culprits are. She was talking that. And then another person was in that mix of feminists, and that was Naomi Wolf, Dr. Naomi Wolf. Brilliant woman, Rhodes Scholar, graduate from Yale, Oxford University, PhD, and she specialized in women's issues. Well, until just a year and a half ago, she was probably the most sought after a woman speaker on health issues for women in the world. And then it all stopped. And then the whole movement went against her. And now she's against the whole movement. And she said so on this program twice, that the women's movement has betrayed women. Where is that women's movement when it comes to my body, my choice? You can't just say it's okay, my body, my choice for abortion or not, but what about getting the vaccine or not? And so she's adamant, but all of her contracts dried up, all this stuff. Now she has new opportunities, but the old doors are slammed shut, and they slammed shut on Chris Hedges, on Abby Martin, on Glenn Greenwald, on anyone who stood up and told the truth, if that truth in any way embarrassed those in power. So here she's talking again, and maybe it's time for people to listen to what she has to say without first filtering what she says through all of the epigenetic condition responses to propaganda, because only when you listen from neutrality can you hear what she's really saying and see if it makes sense to you. If it doesn't make sense, then it doesn't make sense. But if it does, for a lot of people, it might give them a better understanding of what we should be doing working together instead of being in this endless battle that makes no sense and does not help anyone. This is Camille Paglia, professor, university, and very independent thinking. And agree or disagree, but she needs to be heard out there, and it would be good to see her debating some of the people who say they're feminist, but then don't support a woman. And a lot of people now are agreeing, but they're a minority. When I say a lot, within one tiny radical group, that we should eliminate all words, rewrite history, eliminate all words that define a woman. So a man, a woman, a brother, sister, father, mother, grandmother, grandfather, and uncle, all of those words are to be eliminated out of all reference books, dictionaries. They don't exist. A cis woman would. Well, now, most people had never heard of a cis woman, but now the people who are telling you what a real woman is are having more power than the feminist movement, and women are talking back. You could agree or disagree with that, but this is just one example, and she talks back. She's not afraid of anyone or anything. So if you haven't heard her before, now put your seatbelt on. She's really good. Now to that interview.
Now, I notice, you know, wherever I go in the world, actually, that upper middle class career women are very unhappy. They're very unhappy, okay, even though they might, they have achieved a certain status. What I'm saying is feminists have to stop blaming men for their own unhappiness. The unhappiness is due, I believe, to huge systemic changes that women, for thousands of years, women had their own world. There was the world of women, and there was the world of men. And the sexes didn't have that much to do with each other, okay? This is a brand new experiment to have this new system where now women can be economically independent now. They're no longer dependent on a father or husband or brother, okay, for their sustenance, right? And they're working side by side with men in the workplace, right? This is an experiment. It's never happened before, right? I'm saying in the book that we may have to accept a certain amount of tension between the sexes in the workplace. Right? That the feminist idea that if we can just suppress men enough, women will be happy. I say no. Okay, I say, okay, and it's on the basis of my own experience as a child in Italian-American immigrant community, okay, is that what women have lost is the old solidarity that they once had when they totally ruled the private sphere. The women's life all day long was with other women once, multi-generational, older women, okay, as well as the children, right? It was a huge tribal experience. And now what women are feeling is a sense of isolation and loneliness, disconnection, okay, from their old function. I'm not saying to go back. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying stop blaming men, all right? Like, for example, these marches that just happened, okay? The women were exhilarated. They were almost hysterical, okay? I don't think it had anything to do with feminism or anti-Trump or anything like that. I thought it was that women suddenly felt that surge of happiness again for being with other women, all right? All right? You can actually see it in the Odyssey when Odysseus is washed up naked and alone. He's lost his ship, you know, on the shores of Phaeacia, and he wakes to the sound of girls, women's voices laughing and singing and so on. It's the Princess Nausicaa going down to do the laundry on the shore. Okay, and actually that is exactly what was going on up until fairly recently, where women were all together. They did all their chores together. They did the laundry. They did the cooking. I can remember this from my childhood in Endicott, New York, upstate New York, among the immigrants. Italian women. All four of my grandparents, plus my mother, were born in Italy. So I actually had that experience, the experience that went on for thousands of years in the agrarian era. Well, women all together. In fact, my mother described as a small child in Italy how all the women would get together to do the laundry and go up the hill to Il Sorgo, which was a fountain cut out of the side of the mountain, probably went back thousands of years to the Roman period and so on. She remembered the singing, the picnicking, et cetera, okay? So there was even though people were laboring physically in the agrarian era, there was a happiness, okay, a sense of identity. There was no quest for identity. Now, it's no place for an independent thinker, okay? If you were an independent thinker, you had no options as a woman except to become a nun, okay? So I know, okay? I know I would have been a nun, okay, 100 years ago. All right, I know it, okay? And obviously, you know, communities are intellectually repressive in their own way. Nevertheless, we're in a period now of quest for identity, tremendous pressures on young people to form their own identity separate from those old automatic tribal and community affiliations. So I think there's a tremendous, as a classroom teacher, of now, more than 40 years, I can see this. And it's really, there's a tremendous sense of psychological dislocation among young people. And they find many ways to try to achieve some sorts of identity. And part of it right now, of course, is social media, which is causing entropy in terms of ability to reason, to read, to write, the old things, and so on. All right. Now, I'm also calling for an end to this insanity of excluding biology, okay, from gender studies. Now, how in the world did this happen? All right. How did women's studies and gender studies end up teaching about gender without any reference whatever to biology or to hormones? Right? And right now, post-structuralism dominates gender studies everywhere. Now, I spent 6 months writing my dissection of Foucault, okay, what is that, 27 years ago. Now, assignment, hello, anyone who thinks that Foucault is somehow, the master of the universe has clearly not read my exposure of him in Junk Bonds and Corporate Raiders, all right? I mean, the man was a fraud. I'm sorry, okay? Compared to Freud, okay? I mean, Freud is out and Foucault is in. All right. The post-structuralists, pose as leftists. Okay? But what were they doing in the past few decades with this crazy parasitic growth of this administrator master class, okay, that has taken over the universities, right, at a period of obscene, okay, rise in tuition costs, student debt that's crippling families and so on? Where were these leftists, the great leftists, okay, on our college campuses, okay? Were they resisting the administrators, okay? Were they denouncing student debts, okay? Were they lamenting, the plight of adjunct teachers and so on? No. They were all running to conferences, talking about Foucault with their stupid elitist jargon. Okay, and you think they thought that's leftism? Okay, these post-structuralists are the worst mercenary careerists. Okay, in this country, right, the leading post-structuralists, okay, and new historicists are retiring as multimillionaires. And they pose as leftists. Okay, it is a scandal. Forget Foucault, for heaven's sakes. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. Okay, so we have to bring biology, an authentic study of medicine, of anthropology, of history, back into gender studies. That's one thing I'm definitely calling for. Now, aside from these things, okay, there are a number. I'm on the warpath against, okay, the bureaucracy of the campuses. Okay, when at Bennington College, my first job in the 1970s, in 1976, we had an uprising, okay, as faculty against the trustees and the administrators, the president of that college, and it was like huge, publicized. Nora Ephron went up there and wrote it up for Esquire magazine and so on. And the faculties are totally castrated. What are they doing? The faculties have absolutely been marginalized in this country. They didn't utter a peep as this administrative masterclass took over. The administrators who are in league with federal mandates or federal authorities in Washington. I mean, we're living in an age of Stalinism right now. Okay, and again, the leftists have they talk a big talk. Okay, but they do nothing where it really matters. Okay, which is demand 50% reduction in the number of administrators. Okay, and also 75% reduction in their salaries. Okay, which often exceeds that of the faculty members. People should realize how many of the ills that I'm decrying about the suppression of speech and free thought on campus are coming from the administrators. Okay, who are these social welfare do-gooders? Oscar Wilde. Okay, was absolutely scathing about these humanitarians. These aggressive philanthropists who dominated the Victorian period. All right. At any rate, in terms of other things in the book, there is a reprint of what I consider an important piece of mine in Time magazine, where I called for the end of this outrageous age 21 law in the United States, where young people cannot buy a beer. Okay, do you know nowhere in the world except in very repressive regimes, right? Like the United Arab Emirates and so on. Is there anything like that? Okay, what mothers against drunk driving, okay? They wandered into an area here that has been extremely destructive. When that rule was passed, 1984, okay, what did young people do, unable now to drink, okay? They began taking the club drugs, of course, okay? Ecstasy and ketamine and all this crap that they take into their bodies, right? And what's happened to the ability, of young people to go to a bar, learn how to drink in a sensible way in an adult context, be able to sit with the opposite sex, learn how to talk, how to flirt, discuss ideas, okay? It has absolutely a cruel law. No one has raised, you can buy marijuana in Colorado, right? And young people can't get a glass of beer, okay, when they arrive in college. Do you realize how outrageous that is? Now, why aren't you more outraged, okay? that has to end. All right. So just to return to what I was saying about the solidarity of women in the agrarian period, I think that probably part of my ability to analyze things comes from my exposure to almost a kind of a capsule condensed version of human history. I experienced the agrarian era through my contact with those powerful country women who had immigrated, and there's a whole piece in my book about Southern women, okay, about the power of the rural paradigm and the strength of Southern women and so on, but we were a whole town of us really from Italy concentrated in this area of the Triple Cities in upstate New York because of the shoe factories, the Endicott Johnson shoe factories. So I then had a direct experience of the industrial era, which followed the agrarian era. My grandfather, everyone in the town, went to the factories, which dominated Endicott with the smokestacks in that period before environmental laws. The soot would be heavy, on windowsills. You could smell the tanning pools and so on. So I had the experience of the industrial era. And then my father, fresh out of the paratroopers in World War II, was able to go to college on the GI Bill. I was born while he was in college. My parents married at 20. And had me at 21, so he was like mopping the cafeteria floor, the only member of his large family to go to college. Then he became a high school teacher and then a professor at Le Moyne College in Syracuse. So we moved into the new surface sector, economy, right? So I, in my own life, I've experienced all these transitions in human history. So I think it's given me a kind of insight into change. Now, what I'm saying in the book is that those women, the country women, okay, were more powerful, okay, than any feminist. Okay, they were physically powerful, literally, in that period before automatic washers and dryers, everyone did laundry by hand. I can remember my grandmother washing on the back porch with a washboard, okay? They were powerful, like this, all right? And these women had big voices, okay, and big attitudes, all right? So, I mean, in fact, once when my father was teaching high school in the small farming town of Oxford, New York, we lived for a year in the upper floor of a farmhouse, and there was like a hilarious moment. My father was out with his brother. They were standing outside smoking a cigarette, and suddenly the farm woman yelled at them. Okay, a calf had escaped from the barn, and she said, "Stop her!" Okay, to my father and my uncle, and the calf thundered by. My father and my uncle just stepped backwards as it went by, and the farm woman went, chased the calf, and came back carrying the calf, right? And as she's passed them, she said, "Men." Okay, those were the women. For thousands of years, country women had physical power and mental power, and they were the equals of men. In fact, it's no coincidence that the first states and territories to give women the right to vote were in the West. Okay, that it was the pioneer areas. Okay, where it was obvious that women were the equals of men. Whereas it right to the very end, the educated states, the states where the great universities were, like Pennsylvania, New York State, Massachusetts, and so on, refused to grant women the right to vote. Not until the constitutional amendment was passed in 1920. It's because the differential between the upper middle class man and upper middle class woman, okay, in the late 19th century and early 20th century, was very profound. Okay, a lady seemed to be a different entity, seemed to be far more emotional, tended to faint, tended to be rather delicate, etc. All right, so the idea of granting such women, however admirable, the right to vote, was not as easy as it was for the territories.
Okay. Her views. But the key to what she said is men and women have always worked together, but in different ways, had their own areas of expertise. And so we've got to stop all of this male hating. Because it's gotten ridiculous. Not only you hate it today if you're just born a male, but then there's a prejudice that you're going to be toxic. Therefore, any young male should be feminized. So how is it that we're taking away the feminine, we're putting the feminine in men and taking it out of women, as if this is a whole new paradigm? Your thoughts. I'm not going to give my input. I'd like to hear yours. All right? I'm saying we need to have these to have a discussion. Now we're going to go to another clip. And this clip, again, it's an important discussion, one that we're not having, and we should. And I want to hear more people in the audience call in. All right? I'd like to hear what you have to say, because almost always, when 90% of the time when people call in, they share something that's informative. They want to put cameras now. The United States government wants to put cameras in everyone's home. Have you heard about this? Well, we have. And we want to thank Redacted and Clayton Morse and his wife for bringing us this newest information. Remember, they want to control every aspect of your life. And for a lot of people, probably around half of Americans, they're into it. They're fine. They don't care. They don't see. They're not looking ahead to see where all this is going. The digital currencies, the health cards, the 15-minute cities, they're just not looking. Well, you should, because this is coming at you real quick.
Installing cameras in your homes. What if, okay, that sounds horrifying, but what if they said they were going to do it to reduce domestic violence, abuse, and other illegal activity?
Oh, you mean because it's going to protect me now? Oh, that's what it's about. It's going to protect me.
Like if I beat you up.
Sign me up. If you beat me up.
If I decide to start beating you up, the government will stop it. It will protect you from these guns.
Well, I got the cameras on and you're beating me up. And then like the government shows. I'm like, no. I was actually, thanks government. I was actually into that.
Yeah.
What if your food portions are too small? It's like, hey, you're just not feeding me enough.
I thought of that.
Hey, you're eating meat. Are you eating meat, David? David eats like a steak every four and a half minutes. Like they'd have a camera in your house, you cooking a steak, saying no way.
Well, this is something that the Cato Institute is actually studying. For there's a reason, not just to freak you out. Although it freaks me out. The reason they're studying this is because they see a correlation between people who are A-OK with central bank digital currency and people who don't mind this kind of government surveillance. Because the link they're making here is that these two things are not that far off. Because a central bank digital currency would be able to track how much money you have, when you make that money, what you do with it, what you're allowed to spend it on, all of those things. We're going to talk about that more in a second. But let's just talk about this privacy thing, because it's interesting to think that there would be a generation, a population, and a generation of people who would give the government this power, sort of happily, I suppose. Now, this is from the Cato Institute. They do tend to be an institute that's related to libertarianism, small government, and big freedom type research in general. So at least we know who we're dealing with, right?
Yeah, center right. But they also take a huge amount of funding from the Koch Foundation. The Koch Foundation and the Koch brothers, of course, helped found the Cato. Just so.
Yes. So, okay. So you can see that, you know, where their bias may or may not lie. But here's how the survey overall shakes out. Overall, 3/4 of people oppose government surveillance in their homes. Take a look at the chart. 14% are in favor of this. 10% say they don't know. So they're not really bothered by even the very question of governments installing cameras in your home. And they literally did just ask it that, not in a way that's like, you know, couched in any sort of way. I mean, think about how that would have panned out for COVID if you had gone to visit your grandmother, or, you know, two people went to the store instead of one, or what have you.
Yeah, they say it in the headline there, surveillance camera. Would you be okay opposed to installing government surveillance cameras in all homes?
Right. Now,
I want to interview five people from that 4%, 14%, just five. I just have some questions.
Me too. Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you?
When you parse this out by age group, look at how the data plays out. Young people are overwhelmingly more okay with cameras in their home than older people. After people hit about 45 years old, the reporting plummets to 6% or fewer of people who would say okay to cameras in their home. I assume that those older people are just people who are afraid of falling and then no one around to help them. But look at how almost 30% of young adults between 18 and 29 say that they are okay in favor of government surveillance cameras in their homes. 20%, that's one in five of people between 30 and 44. When you break it down by party and race, this is also interesting. So if you look at, these are just people who are in favor of it. More Democrats than Republican by a margin of just 3%. Or by a margin of 6%, rather. Far more Black people are okay with this.
What?
Which is interesting because
33%?
If you think about this idea that you are not safe from the government because the government is harder on Black people than any other race, why would you invite them into your home then, the one place you might feel more safe? Gender.
So that's what they're asking. They wouldn't be asking if they didn't intend to put their cameras. Now, mind you, their cameras are going to be cameras that will also have audio. They'll be able to record everything, and that's all being fed. Everything that they see and hear in your home is being fed into artificial intelligence that then will be able to determine by what you say in your conversation. They'll read every email. They'll look at every photograph, everything that you've ever done, and they'll determine whether or not you're a threat or not. So if you've read the wrong articles, the wrong in their opinion, because anything that challenged the establishment would be considered wrong, then you're labeled more likely to be a problem or even a domestic terrorist. We're going to finish this up with Neil Oliver, and he's saying something about the recently arrested, both the head of the Scottish government and her husband. And this is an unusual situation, but this Nicola Sturgeon is also probably the most woke head of a country outside of Trudeau in Canada in the world. I mean, everything was woke in her administration. So let's go to this clip, because when the head of a country gets arrested who's woke, I think it's worthwhile listening to.
We're on the lookout for a motorhome fugitives and a pile of paperwork with potentially corrupt accounts in the background. Is that what we're looking for here?
Oh, it's been a fun, in some ways it's been a fun 24 hours for sure. I mean, for those of us in Scotland who had Nicola Sturgeon's card map from the beginning, a dozen years ago, it has been a joy to watch. I mean, many of us, myself included, have been saying for years that the SNP is a bunch of clowns. And yesterday was the moment when finally the clown car pulled up and the doors fell off and the wheels fell off and the horn went wah, wah. So that was terrific. but you know, we live here. I mean, I'm sure it is very funny for people watching this and, you know, and seeing this ridiculousness play out. But it's a Pyrrhic moment in the sense that the SNP have had more than long enough to wreck Scotland. A reckoning for the SNP, if it is a reckoning for the SNP, it's come too late. The damage has been done in every sphere. Mm. It'll be generations in the fixing. The SNP have sown nothing but division up here, and the consequences are writ large for the people of Scotland.
Mm. Neil, when you look back at the press conference where she was her usual smooth self, she's an excellent communicator, saying there wasn't anything left in the tank. A lot of us, you included, I'm sure, were very sceptical and thought there's more to this than meets the eye. We knew this police investigation was going on in the background. She basically took of Scottish people for mugs, because that's really why she went when she did.
It's a tragedy that is unfolding here, realistically. I mean, many of us, and I count it as the majority, most Scots had the SNP's card marked long ago, but for some reason other people in other parts of Britain It viewed her differently, and it was aided and abetted hugely by the complicit mainstream media that pumped out miles of column inches and hours of television suggesting that she was this, you know, giant political figure. I mean, Catherine Foster there was echoing similar. You know, I mean, she was a big figure in Scottish politics, I don't know, in the same way that Mr. Blobby was a big figure on Saturday night television for those of us of a certain age. But it doesn't mean Mr. Blobby was credible. Just big and loud and maybe colourful. But the point is that most of us up here knew that the SNP have never cared a jot for Scotland or for the people of Scotland. The shout for independence was cynical. It was just a tool that they were using to get what they wanted, which was power and money and influence, which is what they got. And hopefully, if there's any positive to come out of this at all, it's that political pundits and commentators will look on and begin to perceive the SNP the way that I have and most of us have. And it's to say this in simple terms, the SNP, if the SNP was a person, it would be a weird, creepy person that was up to no good. It would be the kind of person that if they got on the late bus, you'd be praying that they would sit down beside somebody else and not you. And millions of us in Scotland have seen the SNP and Nicola Sturgeon and her cohort for that 4 years. But I mean, it reached a high watermark during the lockdown when the BBC in Scotland gave Nicola Sturgeon live television coverage every day about what her political machinations. You know, it was absolutely galling and sickening to watch. But here we are, you know, as you were rightly saying in your introduction, you know, the SNP have been exposed, and it's at that ridiculous level, you know, where people are speculating about
We're going to have to take a break for BAI to go to its news. Here's the point. Scotland had the most woke identity politics, critical race theory ahead of any country in Europe, only matched by Trudeau, who's a complete and total idiot, in my opinion. Well, imagine if we could do the same in our country by taking on the head of the Democratic Party or Republican Party and the presidents, the heads, the policymakers, the opinion leaders, the people who suck out all the air in the room. I'll give you an example. Right now, as you all know, Trump was indicted. If he broke the law, he should be indicted. But so too should have Hillary Clinton. So too should have been every other president that took documents home without first getting the approval of the National Archives, and Bill, Joe Biden also. Now, we learned yesterday from Senator Grassley that there's now evidence in 15 audio tapes made by a Burisma board member. Remember, Burisma was the oil conglomerate, totally corrupt, that the attorney general or the head of their justice in Ukraine, when it was still democratically elected officers, he was investigating how corrupt Burisma was, and including Hunter Biden on the board. Joe Biden went there because he was under President Obama. He was the envoy taking care of all the business for the United States in Ukraine. And he went over and he bragged about it. Right there, he said in front of the Council on Foreign Relations, I went over there, I said, this man has to be arrested, or this man has to be fired, the attorney general, within the next 6 hours, you don't get your $1 billion. Well, you know, son of a gun, they fired him. Okay, why didn't the media ask, why was this person fired? What was he doing that they were so terrified of? But they didn't. They just let it go. Well, now we know. One of the people that was on the board at that time has two voice recordings with Joe Biden, that's what's alleged, and that's in 15 with his son, as, quote, insurance. The FBI has had that information and blocked out, redacted it in a letter that is not a top secret letter. It's just a regular letter, and therefore should be allowed to be seen by the entire American public. But when it was given to a House committee, the fact that there were recordings by this person who was on the board of Burisma, the oil giant in Ukraine, that was blocked out. Why? And yet, before it was blocked out, the head of the committee and Grassley both had a chance to read it and saw that there's damning information in there. So shouldn't everyone be treated the same? They should, but they're not, and that's unfortunate. So again, it's starting. And by the way, tomorrow I'm going to deal with, guess who wants to become a part of the BRICS nations now? Surprised me this morning, France, Macron. Spoke with the South African president to ask could they bring up in the next BRICS meeting about France joining them. Why would France want to join BRICS? I'll go into all this and who owns the natural resources that all the countries in Europe need in order to keep going, and it's China. So a lot to discuss coming up that will impact the dollar, impact our economy, and also impact our body politic. A real quick quick announcement about a special we have today as a fundraiser for this radio station. You're going to get, now that it's summer, you're going to get energy stuff because that's the one thing you need when it gets hot out. Also, a lot of people are complaining about how they feel, you know, their muscles, their bones, everything. They're having all these problems. So we came up with a special. Here's the special. The special is, first of all, what I would consider the finest proprietary blend of natural, non-caffeinated energy products. For example, electrolytes of sodium citrate, magnesium citrate, potassium citrate, D-ribose, L-taurine, L-arginine, creatine monohydrate, green tea extract, cordyceps mushroom, acetyl-L-carnitine, Panax ginseng, ginkgo biloba, L-carnosine, rhodiola, rosea, root, cayenne, coenzyme Q10, and vitamin B12 in a natural, organic orange juice. So, if you want an energy drink, this is it. And in the summertime when you're working out and you're going out biking, walking, and you take your little thermos with you, your drink pack, this is what you should fill it with, one scoop of this. And even gives you two grams protein. So it's really good. Then chondroitin and glucosamine sulfate. And here's what's in here. And you all know if you need this. First of all, you're getting magnesium, aspartate, and ascorbyl palmitate, which is a fat-soluble vitamin C, MSM, 1,000 milligrams, chondroitin sulfate, 750 milligrams, glucosamine sulfate, 750, and acetylglucosamine, 750. Almost nobody takes that, and they should. Sea cucumber, 200 milligrams, turmeric, boswellia, citrus bioflavonoids, cayenne pepper, 40,000 heat units, or oregano herb powder, white willow bark, broccoli stem powder, garlic clove powder, rosemary leaf powder, ginger root extract. Nobody has this, but I know a lot of people would benefit it. So if you're out there and you're walking around and you don't want to one of those people who have got all kinds of aches and pains, well, this is the special today. I can't remember when we ever put this on special. And you're also finally going to get the 7 Steps to Total Health, and it's 7 DVDs. It's a long playing one, and everything to help you is in here. All right? There's all kinds of good stuff. So the whole package is on sale. I think you're getting around a 55% discount. Yeah, 55% discount. So here it is. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or Neil in the Vitamin Closet, Monday to Saturday, noon to 8, at 646-926-5430. Or you can just go online and order. But if you care about getting out, getting exercise, getting healthy, being in the sun, all of which is good, and you should do, you're going to be burning energy. Because it's not the winter time. You're not sitting all day. You need energy stuff. And if you're the average person over 30, you sure do need glucosamine and chondroitin with all those other great nutrients, all in a special blend I created. And then how to get healthy and how to get a whole new repurposed body. All right, 877-627-5065. We're out of time now. And let's go over to Eutrice Leet, who's standing by. And by the way, Eutrice is over at her new home, and she's like a whole new person, whole new purpose to life, and I'm sure she's going to be helping a lot of people based upon the changes that she herself has gone through. Have a nice day.